the conversation of your life. Local, relevant, digital, and always on.
America will hear my two cents.
Elected to serve iHub radio listeners across the desert cities. He calls it as he sees it.
Quick question.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
Someone answer him now!
Well, here's a scary thought for you. There's 31 days until Christmas. I don't know if you're ready. I'm not. I got my Christmas wish list together. It's, I decided I'm just going to go for it this year. I'm going to put on there what I really want. I do have the pair of black socks and on the list, because that's what dads always get. You always get the black socks. Nope, somebody never forgets that one. But I put on a few other things, like a motorcycle, a really expensive drone, a few other things that, you know, nobody's going to get me. But hey, if they're not going to get me it anyhow, I might as well wish for it and put it on my Christmas wish list. So I went around and I made Christmas list forms for everybody in the house. My grandson returned his quickly, a big, long list of stuff he wanted. I go, well, you got time, you got time. And then I checked and I found out, no, there's just 31 days until Christmas. I happened to actually venture out into a store's, and you can see they're planning for a big Black Friday. I went into it's a couple of retailers, and their shelves are just stocked. Like, it's really amazing how much inventory is out there in the stores. It's getting hard to walk down the aisles, parts of the store that were empty. And you can see the workers, they're all out there getting all the goods out, unpacking them. It was almost like walking through a warehouse as they're getting ready for Black Friday. So, but it all figures. Consumer confidence is up. The University of Michigan's out with a new report. They do it on a regular basis. And their index of consumer sentiment was revised even higher than what they had before. The numbers, I don't know what these mean, but I guess it means 100% would be perfect. They're at 96.8. On the consumer confidence index, that's up from 95.7 a month ago, and up again from 95.5 the prior month to that. So they say in the 4 months they've been tracking it, that consumer expectations for the economy remain good, which means strong spending, which probably means why the retailers have so much inventory out there. Are you ready to start shopping yet? I haven't even thought about it. I'm waiting for Thanksgiving to come along. I'm doing the turkey cooking and all that. I have a quiet turkey at home. But anyhow, so it's good numbers for the economy. And University of Michigan, I guess they've been doing this, I don't know, since 97 they've been tracking. A long time they've been tracking this. And anyhow, consumer confidence is up. And there you go. It's interesting. I got this report, came through on an email ticker, and it said it referenced the University of Michigan. So I started to do a little news search. I wanted to see what else was out there in this, and I wanted a little bit more reporting for you. So I come along and I'm looking for some headlines, and I come up with this one. It's from CNBC. It says, U.S. consumer confidence dips in October, misses expectations. Okay, well, who am I supposed to believe, the University of Michigan or CNBC? And so I start digging in and reading this story. It says, U.S. consumer confidence dipped slightly in October. Okay, there's the word slightly. As worries over business conditions and employment prospects ticked up. And this is from data from something called the Conference Board, which I looked up, and I guess they've been around a long time. They're a consumer confidence index, and they're slipped to 125.9. They're obviously on a different scale than the University of Michigan. But they said the reading in September was 126.3. So from 126.3 to 125.9. And they also said economists polled by Dow Jones expected the number to be 128. So I guess that must be missing expectations, as the Dow Jones economists thought it would be at 128, and it came in at 125.9. I don't know where they actually went and talked to consumers. Somebody named Lynn Franco is the director of economic indicators at the conference board said that consumers feel good about present conditions, but future expectations lowered slightly as consumers expressed some concerns about business conditions and job prospects. And then she concludes, however, confidence levels remain high and there are no indications that consumers will curtail their holiday spending. Wow, that's quite a different take than the headline. The headline says U.S. consumer confidence dips in October, misses expectations. I think you could have probably put consumer confidence levels remain high and there are no indication that consumers will curtail their holiday spending. You could have gone either way on that one. I'm just going to go with the University of Michigan. And I'm also going to go with what I saw with my own eyes. Have you seen what's going on out there? I'm driving down the boulevard. I live in Desert Hot Springs, so there's a main boulevard in and out of town. And of course, during the Great Recession, there was nobody on that boulevard. You could just sail through. One of the benefits of a very down economy is you can travel because nobody can afford to go anywhere. So they're just staying at home. They're not working. They had nowhere to go anyhow. Well, now apparently they're all going shopping or to work, whatever they're doing in an up busy up economy, traveling about. They got money to spend on gas, so they're doing it. And the boulevards are getting backed up and blocked. It's busy. The traffic is much busier out there. And if you go talk to some of the shopkeepers, they'll say, hey, business seems to be up. We're okay. We're enjoying this. And the hotels are full. I know the big hotels in our city have been surprisingly booked. Even off season, they were busy. And now it's hard to get a room there. Which is good news. I stopped by last night. Of course, it was the pools were full. And we have spas in Desert Hot Springs. So how we tell how busy things are is by how busy the swimming pools are. We got 20 boutique hotels that are fed hot water, hot natural mineral water, Chamber of Commerce. Here you go. I'm going to give you the plug. And they're all fed by these hot natural mineral waters, and people flock from all over to go to Desert Hot Springs, which is the only place in the Coachella Valley with hot natural mineral water. You can get pool heated water anywhere, but water that comes straight out of the ground at 140 degrees and is cooled to make the various temperatures in the hot natural mineral water pools, that only happens in Desert Hot Springs. And by the way, if you sell pool heaters, don't bother calling on Desert Hot Springs because nobody has one. I know the private residences do because they don't have the hot water wells, but there's no hotels in Desert Hot Springs that have pool heaters. It all comes right out of the ground. You mentioned that to somebody when you're at the facility at the complex, and they say, "Really? It's amazing. All this hot water, all these different varying temperatures of hot water pools, and yep, all right out of the ground." I really strayed from consumer confidence. Maybe it's time just to move on. But anyhow, hey, you know, it's way better to be busy and have good economic times than bad ones. And for now, you know what? Let's just enjoy the Christmas season. We'll leave CNBC alone with their headline that says U.S. consumer confidence dips in October. And we're going to go with the University of Michigan. Consumer sentiment is up. And that not reaching an all-time high, but certainly way better than it was before. Now, I'm just going to take a minute here to plug the United States Postal Service because they've got this great new app that lets you see exactly what is coming in your mailbox. Not a list, but actual scan. I'm looking at, this one happened to be a paycheck, which I was real happy to see. And I go to my email, open it up, and it says Informed Delivery Daily Digest is the subject line in the email. And it comes in from the United States Postal Service Informed Delivery app and just sends an email right to my email box. And I open it up, and there's a picture. An actual picture of every parcel, every letter that's in my mailbox. Well, I guess they must take pictures of them somewhere. And so the guy scans them, and they said, hey, you know, we got these pictures. What can we do with them? Oh, let's send them out to people. So this is really darned useful. I know whether to go check my mail or not. Obviously, if I see a check to me, somebody wants to give me money, I'm down to that mailbox, pick that thing up and deposit it. But then they show you what's coming to your mailbox, not there yet even. So this one actually said that. It said, coming to your mailbox today. And there it is, a check. It's just the outside of the envelope. I can also see all the other stuff. You know, the flyers, the little postcards that the guys selling houses want you to see and everything. So, hey, yeah, check it out. I'm just, I guess the way you get there is USPS Informed Delivery. I think if you do a search on that, Informed Delivery, that'll get you to there. It's a really great service. If you're out of town, you want to see what's in your mailbox, you know, you just want to see what's in the mail. Coming ahead of time. There to go. You don't have to guess anymore. What a world we live in. What technology has brought us. Now we don't have to wait until we put the key in the mailbox and open it to look. Or open the mailbox door. We can see what it is right from our computers at home. We don't have to do anything. We just do computers all the time. All right. Well, it's not Christmas in Santa Clara. It is Christmas in Fisher, Indiana. A company called Visual Intelligence Technology, they specialize in autonomous driving solutions, is relocating its headquarters from California to Fisher, Indiana. And it's expected to create up to 160 new high-wage jobs by the end of 2022. So Fisher, Indiana is celebrating. Hey, they got something good going on. They're happy about it. It's a Santa Clara-based company, but I guess no longer. They're moving their headquarters, and they're spending $6 million to do it. So what they're going to build, it looks, I'm sitting here looking at some of the technical details, a 450 square feet of office space. That doesn't seem like very much. All right, and 25,000 square feet of laboratory. So this must just be a lab. I bet you most of the facility is outdoors since it's a automated testing thing. So what they're doing is they're, that must be it. 25,000 worth of laboratory. That's a 25,000 square foot laboratory. That's a big laboratory, and I guess most of it must be outdoors where they drive the cars and test them. Anyhow, it's what they say here in, how excited are they? He says, we're extremely excited to relocate our headquarters to Indiana. Indiana's commitment to growing and enhancing its technology sector along with its business-friendly environment and collaborative industry partnerships is why we chose to locate here. And they said they look forward to deploying their autonomous microtransit services in the city of Fisher, Indiana. So, all right, there you go. Fisher wins, California loses. I wonder how that came about. Well, you just look. They've got a very active economic development department in the state of Indiana. In fact, that's the name of it, the Indiana Economic Development Corporation. And they offered up $46,500 in headquarters relocation tax credits. So whatever tax this company would pay, they can offset that with $46,500. Okay, that's interesting. And then you got, they also got $3.5 million in conditional tax credits. And those tax credits are based on the company creating jobs. That's usually the focus in the states, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Ohio, New York, West Virginia. Anybody looking to attract people to their, they're looking to create jobs. Unlike California, where the focus is just taxes. How much taxes are you going to give me? That's what I want to know. How much taxes are you going to give me? Not how much jobs you're going to give me. Well, it's 160 new high-wage jobs by the end of 2022. This is Russ Betts on iHub Radio. Lots more ahead. First, we want you to hear this, and we're on it back.
The conversation of your life. Local, relevant, digital, and always on.
America will hear my two cents.
Elected to serve iHub radio listeners across the desert cities. He calls it as he sees it.
Quick question.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
Someone answer him now!
Okay, during the break, I'm looking at the news of what's going on in Hong Kong. We've got all kinds of news feed here in the studio. I got it. Pops up here on my computer screens, and also got a couple of TVs going with different news feeds from around the world. And a little later, I'll be giving you the my perspective and news regarding what's going on in Hong Kong. We're going to continue to keep it local here. We just finished up with Fisher, Indiana, getting a nice Christmas present of 160 new high-wage jobs at the expense of Santa Clara, California, which is finds the company that's based there moving out of state with a $6 million investment elsewhere, not in California. So it was worth it to them to spend $6 million to move out of California. And, of course, the Indiana Economic Development Department kicked in with some incentives, about $3.5 million to move there as long as they create jobs. So, all right, there you go. I don't know if you could have lived in the state without hearing about the state's housing crisis. Everybody's been talking about it. They got homeless. We got housing. We got rents are too high. We got rent control initiatives going on. And, well, up at the Southern California Association of Governments just took this up, and it was really a big, big deal, a big, big meeting. And basically what happened was they were trying to decide where's it all going to be built in the state? And it's a process that happens every 6 years where it's called the RENA cycle, Regional Housing Needs Assessment. And every 6 years they redo this assessment and they decide, well, where's the state going to mandate that low-income housing get built? It's actually low and moderate-income housing. It's not... All right, we'll get off on that tangent another day. So what they do is they go into, they say, hi, Southern California, you take these numbers and divide them up. And the number for Southern California was 1.3 million. Now, in typical fashion, you have six counties that are part of Southern California Association of Governments: Imperial, Riverside, San Bernardino, Ventura, and then you have the big ones. Is it seven? Los Angeles and Orange County. So anyhow, you got all those counties there, and Los Angeles and Orange County usually dominate the vote. And typically what's happened is they've pushed all the state requirements for new low-income housing construction off onto the rural areas. Well, all that did was find people driving a long ways to work, suburban sprawl, and it wasn't working. Well, Mayor Garcetti stepped up to the plate and said it's not the way it's supposed to be done. The jobs are supposed to be here, and the housing associated with those jobs is supposed to be here. And so, no, we're not going to do the same thing we've done before. We're going to realign this. And I sit on the RENA subcommittee, been working on this methodology, they call it, for a year, trying to figure out how to do this. And we've been making the push that small cities with low incomes shouldn't see an increase in the concentration of poverty by the state policy that's trying to eliminate poverty. Well, common sense came along, and what ended up happening, to cut to the chase, is Orange County, the beach cities, and Los Angeles took on a much higher proportion of numbers. Now, to put it in perspective, Desert Hot Springs has about 9,000 homes. And the RENA number, the requirement to build low-income housing, was at around 4,200. So out of the 9,000 homes that exist now, the state was saying you need to build 4,200 low-income houses. That was the old number. Now, the new number that was coming out was going to be 8,600. So nearly half again, or almost doubling of the houses in Desert Hot Springs, were not going to be, upper-end market rate, upper middle class homes. That were going to be low income homes, subsidized housing, and that's not a healthy mix. You need to have all economic demographics represented to give yourself a healthy city. So Desert Hot Springs was going from a ridiculously high number of 4,000 to 8,000, rough numbers, and that's what we were supposed to accept, and that's what Orange County thought was wonderful. Well, it shifted. So now Orange County cities got some higher numbers. And now you got the city of Newport Beach that says it's signaling that it's going to appeal the state housing mandate. Now, they have to wait till February to do it because that's when everything gets finalized. But they're going to say, hey, wait a minute. We don't want these houses. The current minimum for Newport Beach is 4,832 new homes, and that they say should be approved over the next 10 years. And they don't like that idea. They don't like the idea of building 4,000 832 new low-income houses, and I'm supposed to have done some prep work and tell you how many houses there are. I'm going to get that for you. I'm going to actually go in and find out how many homes there are in Newport Beach. I think it's more than 9,000 like Desert Hot Springs has. But they're complaining, and they're going to file suit. They do not want low-income housing in Newport Beach. They want it all shoved off on places like Coachella and Desert Hot Springs and Imperial County, Riverside County, San Bernardino County. That didn't happen. I'll get you that number when we get back. This is Russ Betts. Hey, we got some real interesting messages coming up. We're going to switch to that, and then we'll be back here with you in just a bit.
About it tomorrow. See you tonight. Hear it all day today. If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now on iHub Radio.
And there it is.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
Isn't the internet wonderful? I wanted to know how many housing units there are in the city of Newport Beach. And so while you were listening to all that other great and entertaining content, I did my homework and found out. There's 45,000 housing units in Newport Beach. And that came up in the context of the new housing numbers that are coming out from the state, telling cities how many low and moderate income housing units they need to build. Now, Desert Hot Springs, we'll just use that as a comparison, since it's a city I know well. In my day job, I happen to be a city council member there. We do this here to keep you all entertained here at iHub Radio in Palm Springs. Hey, you know, I think it's entertaining, and not only entertained, but informative. That's the word I was looking for, informative. So let's get on to the information. So in the city of Desert Hot Springs, a state mandate that was coming down was the city of Desert Hot Springs with 9,000 homes was going to be required to build another 8,200. So nearly doubling the number of homes, but all of them being low-income, state-mandated homes. Well, there was a big sea change with these numbers up at the Southern California Association of Governments, where the methodology is developed that divvies this up. And instead of them all coming down to Desert Hot Springs and all the other rural cities and creating this suburban sprawl, the end result was the recommendation to the state is going to be higher. We want to build these in the coastal cities, Orange County, Los Angeles. And all that came about because Mayor Garcetti in Los Angeles said, you know what, we're not going to do this anymore. We're going to do this right. We're going to do this the way it's supposed to be. Low-income jobs are supposed to, or low-income housing is supposed to be where the service jobs are. People shouldn't be driving so far. So if we're going to provide this low-income housing, we're going to put it where, so people aren't having to spend so much time in their cars, whatever. Well, Newport Beach didn't take kindly to that, and they've got 44,000 homes, and they were required to build 4,832 new units over 10 years, find a place in their city to build these units, and they didn't want to build them. Their previous number, which they were still complaining about, was 2,700. But if you're sitting here in a city like Desert Hot Springs or Coachella, which had a number of 15,000, incredible, 15,000 new low-income homes was the number for Coachella. That got revised way down also when the methodology was changed. But here you are, just say for Desert Hot Springs' sake, you're going to double the number of low-income housing by these state numbers. And, you know, we're saying, all right, what are we going to do? Take this again. And a city like Newport Beach was only going to have to do 2,700 out of their 45,000, a very small percentage. So their number goes from 2,700 to 4,800, and they're getting ready to sue and complain about it. Well, what are they going to sue and complain about? They got two options. They can either sue and complain that the state's mandated number of 1.3 million new homes scattered throughout the six counties and 191 cities in Southern California is too high and should be lowered, and they're not going to win that one. Or they're going to argue that cities like Desert Hot Springs, Coachella, should be getting all the homes and that Newport Beach shouldn't and then all of us that work and all of us that live in the rural areas or suburban areas are going to have to continue to drive. It's just they're not going to fly. They're not going to win the suit unless some crazy judge comes along and awards it to them. But anyhow, I sat on the subcommittee for RENA for I've been doing that up there for a year, going to the meetings, working out this methodology, making the push, the same case I'm making to you now, and that Newport Beach didn't like much. And during all this time, representatives from Orange County were making the case, well, we really don't want all these houses. And we're going, well, we don't want them either, and we got way more of them than you do. So, all right, well, we beat that one to death, so we'll see what happens. The state's going to make its final determination in February. I think they have 60 days, and at which point in time everybody said, okay, great, that worked. We've now got something reasonable we can work with and strive for. And Newport Beach, you're also going to step up to the plate and do your fair share, which is really, by percentage-wise, still way lower, even with the new numbers, than anybody else. There's trouble in the Stanislaus Consolidated Fire Protection District, and they're calling this a canary in the pension coal mine. I guess 24 years ago, there were several fire districts in the Central Valley that decided it would be a good idea to join together, and they created the Stanislaus Consolidated Fire Protection District. And it serves, in case you want to know where this is, you're looking at the cities of Modesto, Riverbank, Waterford, and that area. And, well, now it's on the brink of insolvency. And according to this article, that's as a result of swelling pension liabilities. It's an article out by Cal Matters and Dan Walters, who dug into this deeply. And basically, what this one is that California officials, local officials, have been complaining loudly about the ever-rising CalPERS assessments, saying they'll have no choice but to cut services unless local voters are willing to raise taxes. And so that's probably what Stanislaus County Consolidated Fire Protection District is looking at. Well, right now they're cutting services. 4 years ago, they had 80 employees, and most of them were firefighters. Makes sense. A fire district, firefighters, you know, you have more firefighters than you do people administering them, which is maybe that's good. That's the way it's supposed to be. And they had $13 million in revenues. However, once you look into the budget, you find out that salaries were starting to outstrip income. And then the district was ending up with an operational shortfall in 2015 and 16. They're starting to, hey, what's going on here? We're not bringing in as much money as we're spending. And on top of that, the California Public Employees Retirement System said, hi, you now need to give us an extra $330,000, extra $331,000 towards your pension. In case you don't understand, there's a state pension fund. All the public employees get their retirement from that. And it's called CalPERS, California Public Employees Retirement System. And they take all the money that's put in and they invest it. And then hopefully those investments pay sufficiently to cover the cost of all the people that are retiring and what they'll be retiring at. Now, a lot of people tell me there's a crisis. It's in crisis. It's going to be a crisis. I'm just saying it's a crash. I'm predicting a crash. So you just watch. 10 years from now, big crash. It's just totally unsustainable. There's going to be, you just can't cover it. And here you see the canary in the coal mine. They put a canary down in the coal mine. If the canary drops over dead, I guess that means to everybody else in the mine, hey, watch out, conditions are such that we got a problem. Well, that's what's going on in the Stanislaus Consolidated Fire Protection District. They're getting hammered by these extra levies out of CalPERS to cover the pension because, you know, CalPERS is trying to offset its $100 billion in investment losses during the Great Recession. I mean, it invests, and those investments do well, then it covers its cost. But if you go into something like the Great Recession, where the stock market tanks and your investments aren't returning so well, and all of a sudden, but your pension obligations keep going, I guess they ended up with $100 billion in investment losses and a deficit, and CalPERS has to make that up. They got no choice but to charge cities. So in the Stanislaus Fire Protection District, it was 80,000 payment this year. And then they're telling them next year their payment's going to go to $517,000. And then in the 2020 budget, CalPERS has notified them that they'll be having to pay $842,000. So this on top of their operating deficits, they're going, hey, you know, we can't cut it. Well, one of the members, the community of Oakdale, they decided to cancel their fire protection contracts with the JPA, the district, and they were paying $3.5 million a year to the district. Well, of course, the district was saying, hey, we got to raise our fees. We got this stuff coming in from CalPERS. So Oakdale made the jump, and they're now served by Modesto's fire department. They called up, they contacted Modesto and said, hey, we'll pay you. You take us. And apparently they got out of the JPA. It's not always easy when a city joins into a joint powers authority, which becomes a legislative body, a regulatory body, staffed by council members of the cities. It's not always easy to get out of those. Apparently Oakdale managed to. And so they jump ship. So now you got the rest of the board sitting there going, well, Oakdale's not here anymore. And they took their $3.5 million with them. And now we really got a problem. So the district has now slashed its operations. And its staff is now down to just 59, down from, what was it, 80? Gotta flip the page and see what they were at. They were at 80 employees. And now they're down to 59. But even with the slashing, its employees, the retirement costs continue to swell. And they're going to be 46% of the district's payroll this year. So 46% of the payroll isn't going to existing employees. It's going to ones that have already retired. Anyhow, the who's this guy Wharton, as quoted here in this story? I guess he's one of the he's the police chief or the fire chief up there. And he says, we're definitely, they had to close a fire station. Another thing they had to do besides cutting employees, they had to close a fire station. So that saved them $925,000 a year closing it. But they're confident we're definitely going to open it back up. This guy told the Modesto Bee, said, we just have to close it right now because of finances, but we're going to open it again as soon as we can. Well, I don't know when you're going to be able to open Station 23 again if you've cut it, because CalPERS has told the district that its mandatory payment is going to top $1 million. Within 2 years. So, now where are they going to come up with $2 million? They're going to go out to the voters. How many times are you going to go out to the voters for a tax increase? It's not an endless supply of money. And what do you put it on? The property tax? You seen the property tax bill? You know, there's a big fight over Prop 13. We're going to get into that one next week. I think we'll bring a guest on and see what the heck's going on with this attack on Prop 13. But Prop 13 has helped to hold down what you pay on your property tax bill. Of course, if you go study your property tax bill, everybody's saying, wow, I can't believe how high it is. You go look at Proposition 13, it's less than half of what you're paying on your property tax, because you got all these districts that are piling extra money on. And apparently in Stanislaus, they're going to talk about maybe the fire district tax increase on the property tax bill. I'm sure that's what they're looking at. But we'll see what happens. You know, it's a big problem with the state pension, and add to the problem of CalPERS trying to, they've got to make up. I mean, they've got to calculate how much money do we need to keep paying these pensions. And the cities keep pumping out new retirees to keep adding to the retiree pool. They're getting more retirees than they have retirees dying. So the number keeps getting bigger, and CalPERS says, hey, you guys keep retiring these people. We've got to keep up with this. You're in a mandated system. You're in this retirement system. You got this obligation, and sorry, here's what it costs. And CalPERS does its best on investments, hoping to get a good return. Well, that's changing too. Politics is entering into CalPERS' investment strategy. Used to be just go invest and get us the best return you can. You got a mix of different companies and industries. Well, you got political correctness seeping into CalPERS investment. Now they're starting to say politically incorrect companies shouldn't be getting any CalPERS funds. And, you know, soda pop companies, we don't want to invest in them, even though, hey, well, they provide a good return to us. Or the gun manufacturers, they provide a good return. No, we don't want to invest in that. And so then the returns go down at CalPERS. All right, lots more to come on the Russ Betts Show here on iHub Radio in beautiful downtown Palm Springs. Some great messages coming up for you, and we'll be back after that.
Live from the Palm Springs iHub, he calls it as he sees it. The Russ Betts Show. Call 760-544-TALK. Now, here's Russ Betts.
You know, here in the iHub radio studios, we got all kinds of technology feeding us news. We got TV monitors I'm looking at, and then we got the news feed, the wire coming in. And I'm looking at it during the break, and we got Zeldin Trump, Navy SEAL, talking about Schiff Trump impeachment, Klobuchar Senate impeachment. These little teaser headlines we get to look at. Impeachment, Schiff impeachment, Senate impeachment. Is there anything else in the news? I know there's a couple of things. They got one thing I talked about the increased taxes in California on marijuana. We didn't talk about that yet. That's coming up. I'm not going to read the wire. I got my own material on that one. But, man, is there anything else going on in this country besides impeachment? Well, maybe. I don't know. We'll find out. All right. We're not covering that here. I know you can go find it a bunch of other places. We got into it last week with one of our guests has a book. Bill Effinger's book's out on The Kill a Mockingturd is the name of the book, and it's about Trump, and the author is a decidedly anti-Trump person. I know there's lots of you out there, and you know, there's all kinds of problems. There's others out there just absolutely love him, and you know, it's like you get in the middle of that, and my God, it's like, you know, there's got to be something else to talk about. And well, that's what you have the Russ Betts Show here for at iHub Radio in Palm Springs, filling in a whole bunch of other stuff. But okay, so scandal, political earthquake strikes Manteca. I don't know exactly what's going on here, and this article didn't either. But apparently, three Manteca city leaders, the police chief, the city manager, and the finance director, have been placed on administrative leave. And another termination is pending because there's some sort of investigation going on. But the city's not saying what the shakeup is about. Manteca Mayor Ben Cantu described it only as a perfect storm of employee issues. And of course he offers his reassurances to the city that the city is not going to hell and that everything's under management and it'll work. And well, that's what you get councils for. You know, I think most city councils can step in and do the job. They, you know, they got staff there to do the day to day, and it's nice to have them doing the work for you. But you know, you got a councilor that over, as long as they're in a scandal in the council, you know, well, anyhow, so something's going on. And, but the matter is now in the hands of, they say, quote, fair, impartial, outside investigators. That was a statement out of the city attorney's office. So there's fair, impartial, outside investigators looking at the city of Manteca, and they've got the police chief, the city manager, and the finance director have all had to resign. Stay tuned. There's more on that one for sure. Have you seen the little scooters that are out there? Have you tripped over one? I have. I was up in downtown Los Angeles, and you look at these little scooters. You just put your credit card in them or whatever your app is that you use to unlock them, and then you go whizzing away, taking a ride through the downtown city streets. And I got to say, when you look around Los Angeles, there's a lot of people using these. But there's also a lot of people leaving them just tipped over sideways. And I'm walking along trying to find out where I'm going, gazing up at the buildings or something, and I kicked one of those things and nearly fell because it was just haphazardly laying on the sidewalk. It wasn't standing up where it was supposed to be. Well, now a woman who tripped over a scooter is suing the city of Santa Monica because the same thing happened to her. The scooter was left errantly in the middle of the sidewalk. She's walking along. She trips. She falls. She's an elderly woman. She's in her 80s. She's 88 years old. And I guess you can guess what she broke. She broke her hip and an elbow, and they both required surgery. And, well, it turns out that the city of Santa Monica was looking at doing something about that because they had introduced a shared mobility pilot program that relies on scooters and bikes, and the purpose was to create a low-emission mobility options, saying scooters can be a great way to encourage people to get out of their cars. But apparently, it's also a great way for an 88-year-old woman to trip and fall and break her hip and elbow. So, anyhow, this has created a nuisance for cities. And Santa Monica, for its efforts to put in this shared mobility pilot program, now has its first lawsuit. And I'm sure they're wondering what they're going to do about that. Now, if you've been watching some of the international news, I don't know if you have. You've heard, if you get past the fact that there's nothing but impeachment on the news, there's really important stuff going on in Hong Kong. And I got some experience in Hong Kong, mostly in China. I lived in China for 8 years where I worked. I was also a consulate warden for American Citizen Services out of the Shanghai consulate, position I held for 2 years. That was basically a volunteer position where you help Americans that get in trouble. But I spent a fair bit of time in Hong Kong. We've got friends there, good friends. And we talk from time to time. And, of course, my attention has been focused on what's been going on there. And they've got riots. And they've got all kinds of stuff going on. And I come across this interview in the Daily Signal. It's been a little while since I've been to Hong Kong. I'm just getting the reports from friends there. But here comes along an interview in the Daily Signal by a guy named Cody Holdschell. He's being interviewed by the host, Rachel DeGeis, and, well, Rachel DelGeis, I get that right. And I got the transcript of the interview here, and it's really fascinating what's going on. And so with the perspective that I have on this, I'm gonna fill in some of the blanks, but I want to go through this in some detail with you. And so it should... Basically, it's a great interview, and if you want to go listen to it or read it, just go to the Daily Signal, but you can pick up some of it here right now. And Cody Holdschell starts out by saying, thank you for having me. Of course, you know, the normal salutations at the beginning of the interview, and then the question comes, so right now you're on the ground in Hong Kong helping the freedom fighters, giving them emergency first aid. Can you set the scene for us and tell us what you've been witnessing day to day? Now, if you you watch a newscast or something, you know, you can see what comes over, and it's a quick shot. First off, it's the commentator talking, you know, the anchor talking, and then the commentator, the reporter on the field talking, and then they show you a little bit of video clips, and then you get some details. But if you get somebody who's actually embedded into the scene, you get much more interesting detail. That's what I used to love about YouTube, but it's not there anymore. On YouTube, you used to be able to just go tune into a channel and see a guy who's just walking around with his cell phone or his camera, recording it and posting it, and you can see the stuff for yourself. Well, YouTube took all that away. Independent content creators on YouTube are a thing of the past. Finding them is very difficult. They're there, but you can't find them. That's a story for another day. Just trust me, YouTube is, it's all become, all you can find on YouTube, if you want to go look up Hong Kong, is ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, New York Times, CNN, Fox News. All you get are the alphabet corporate media. They've decided that independent content creators were, well, they were getting all the traffic, all the views. So, all right, we're going to get back. We're going to get into some of this in detail. We're going to let you know what Cody Holdschell saw in Hong Kong. And this is Russ Betts on iHub Radio.